Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Rum and Regret Podcast. I am Andy Drake.
Johanna Myers.
Nate Tussey, and we drink and we know things.
Today is Monday, October 25th, and this is a Rum and Regret Extra Shot. We are going to be reviewing Dune, and we got Nate to watch another scary series, Midnight Mass. We're going to be doing a review for that afterwards. So, obviously, we just released another episode that just dropped today. So our segments are on there, our normal segments. So we're just going to jump into the review and get going. Obviously, Dune, a novel written by Frank Herbert, was adapted by David Lynch in 1984, which is a movie that I love. And then again, it was a miniseries on Sci-Fi in the early 2000s, which we actually got Dune and Children of Dune, which actually features James McAvoy as Leto II. I never watched this. I gotta get my hands on it and watch this. But now we have the 2021 movie that just launched on HBO Max. Denis Villeneuve directed it, and let's get into first overall impressions, and then we can talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, and sort of go on from there. So, Joe, what did you think of this movie?
So, get the record scratch audio on hand, because I have to admit, I have never seen nor read a Dune.
That's okay.
So this is my first foray into the Dune universe. The Duneverse, as it were.
Oh. I see what you did there.
So Dune's a hard book to read. Game of Thrones is a commitment, right? Like, if you're going to get into Game of Thrones, like, you're going to, but Dune, I think, is a harder read than Game of Thrones, because there is a 30 page glossary of terms in there.
Yeah. They give you all of the world building notes in the book. Like, there's a map that if you don't know what you're doing, you will get lost in just the map.
Yeah. Like, you have to commit, and like, you could read regular Dune and be fine and not like move on. Like, it gets, they have their Empire Strikes Back in Dune Messiah, and then like Children of Dune and everything past that just gets weird, like super weird. So I read Dune. I started Dune Messiah. I could not finish Dune Messiah. And this was back in the day when I actually read books. So, yeah.
People do that again?
Right. So I would, there's no fault in not being able to get through this book, yeah, or even attempting it for that
matter. Yeah. And never saw the movie. So just went into it pretty much completely blind.
Okay.
With my husband, who, to his credit, he played the computer game.
So did I. So yes.
He had a little bit more Dune knowledge than I did.
Okay.
Wow. No, that's the record scratch moment right there.
Right. Bet you know Dune more than me. But no, we both loved this movie.
Cool.
It was awesome. There was a little bit of Game of Thrones-ishness in the beginning of trying to figure out, like, okay,
yeah,
House Atreides, House Harkonnen, these guys, those guys, what's going on here? Okay, got it. And then the dragonfly copters came out, and we were both like, holy crap, this is the coolest thing we've ever seen.
Straight up Black Panther.
Right.
Ah, crap, I haven't seen Black Panther either.
Yeah. Oh, good God.
Is this when I get kicked off the podcast?
Yeah, let's get a royalty-free record scratch, Andy. We're going to be using that a lot.
Yeah, I think we can do that.
Yeah, I thought it was like really fun. The music is amazing, and
yeah,
like at the end of it, I was like, "Where's the next one?
Right,
give me the next one."
100%.
Yeah, Nate, what were your sort of initial thoughts on this so far?
Yeah, sure. So I have a smidge more Dune than Ken, I think. So I read the original way back in the day,
mm-hmm,
but I couldn't get through it, the first book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember watching the movie several times with my dad.
Okay.
And I remember getting scared of ever putting my hand into anything.
Oh, yeah.
For a long time. because they really made that a lot easier to watch in this version.
Yeah.
I loved it. I, like Joe, immediately wanted more, and that's really, besides some of the parts that were filmed intentionally dark that were kind of hard to see and made you kind of like lean into it. I get what he's doing there, and it worked really well.
Yeah.
I think the only mistake, the only complaint I have is not about the movie. It's about Warner Brothers not making, or at least preparing for a sequel before they saw the box office of this one. So
yeah,
I loved it. I think it's a brilliant movie. It's honestly, it wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. I think just because I had put so much hype on it.
Sure.
So that's on me. That's not on the movie at all. Zimmer's score was just brilliant. I was really kind of surprised with Chalamet as the lead. He did pretty well. I think there were some moments where, you know, it might have been a little flat, but in general, man, he did a great job. I think the cast in general was fucking brilliant. And the fact that we lost a lot of the big names in the first movie, spoiler alert, is kind of a bummer to me. I really wanted like a face off between the Blade Master of Harkonnen and Atreides, you know, kind of thing. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was really good. So if we're talking Dune history again, I read the book. I tried Dune Messiah. I couldn't get through it all. I played the original strategy game with the really crappy graphics on my roommate's computer in college, and then I also played the 2000 strategy game update when they actually got actors from the 1984 movie to replace their roles in there for the little cutscenes. And got the better graphics and everything. And I spent a lot of time. So I delve deep into like Dune lore and was really big into it.
So I'm going to hazard a guess. I'm going to say Ken played the older one.
Okay.
We were together in 2002 and I do not remember him playing Dune.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Yeah. I think he's with you on the old school.
Cool.
Through the movie, he was like, I kind of remember this. And then like once the harvesters and the worms came out, he was like, yes, I remember this.
Yeah, totally. So, that was obviously a big part of the game. Cause you had to harvest the spice in order to get the resources, in order to make stuff, in order to get everything. But in terms of the movie, again, I'm with you guys. I thought this was really well done. I have never been so excited during opening credits and so pissed off during opening credits when I see Dune and then I see part one. I was like, oh,
that was brilliant.
Oh, go to hell. Like, you know, like at that point, you know, it's going to end at a point where you're just like, okay, when's the next one coming out?
Right.
How much do you want to bet that the director slipped that in at the end?
I absolutely 100%.
Right. Yeah. It's like, 100%. I'm going to force you to make a sequel, mofos. Like,
right.
Part one.
Yeah. So, I think we can jump into things that we liked and things that we don't like right now. Joe, I'm totally with you and Nate on the score. I thought the score sort of complemented everything. Just really, really great. The
Dragon, that was Hans Zimmer.
It was Hans Zimmer. Yeah.
That's why I loved it.
The dragonfly ornithopter design is just some of the coolest thing I've ever seen on film.
I like, wish I could have filmed Ken watching this and just like, oh my god, like he was so friggin' excited. That's fucking ass.
Just watching it like start up and go, and then
a working thing, you know,
it's not, right,
not just imagining.
Yeah, and then when Duke Leto does the dive to the harvester too, and they just all the wings go in and they fly through the little sandstorm as well. Oh man, that was just, they're really cool. It makes me upset. So we watch this at home. It makes me upset I didn't go to a theater to watch it.
I
still have the chance to do it. There's not an IMAX screen in Salem, So like if I want to see it in IMAX, I gotta I'm gonna have to travel for it. So who knows? Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. I don't know. But
yeah, we watched it at home too.
Yeah. I really like Rebecca Ferguson as Lady Jessica.
She killed it.
Been a huge fan of her since Dr. Sleep. So I thought she was really great.
Wait, is she Rose the Hat?
Yeah.
Son of a bitch, that's why I like her. I have like a super crush on Rose the Hat.
Oh, man.
I'll give you guys two guesses at what her natural hair color is, but you only need one.
I think that the cast nailed it. And one of the good things about Dune and the world that sort of Herbert built was this is the year 10,000. They do have cloning ability. So let me just say that some of the characters that passed on in this make a comeback later.
I was just going to say, I'm kind of like worried that a lot of people that went to see this movie for a certain somebody might not come to the next movie to see a certain somebody because he's no longer in it.
Yeah, right.
Like, I saw a lot of Momoa fangirls just like,
oh yeah,
seeing Dune, and I'm like,
right.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Trust me, I've watched a lot of weird shit for Benedict Cumberbatch and whoever else I'm obsessed with.
Oh, no. Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm like, just don't fuck this up for us because all the nerds really want this movie to make a second one.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And I also enjoyed, too, that they're taking their time to tell this story versus the Lynch version where they sort of force a lot of the story into sort of the time frame that, you know, that took the same amount of time to tell the story of the full book where we got half of the book this time around. And he really fleshed out part of that story. And we got a lot more of House Atreides than we did in the Lynch version, which is great because you just basically find out in the Lynch version that they're, you know, hey, we're leaving the planet. We're going to Arrakis and that's it. Mm-hmm. So, I think the cast was a big up for this. Again, the music was a big up for this. And then just the fact that they did take their time with a lot of the things and a lot of the characters that did sort of check out in this first version, we did get to spend some time with them and get to know them a little bit before they have their, you know, their sort of their grand exits. So, yeah. Yeah. What do you guys, Joe, what was your, what are some of your takeaways from this that were really good?
Pretty much what you just said, you know, like the fact that you know, we did get a lot of time with characters that bounced, but also, you know, I'm just like so excited for the next one.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what happens. And like, I kind of, should I read the books? Should I, cause now I'm just kind of like in that feverish moment of like, give me more Dune. Should I watch the old school movie? Should I read the books? Should I just leave it?
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, the books are a commitment. So like, if you have the time and you really want to give it the old college try, go for it, you know?
Yeah. Which I probably not because I haven't even made it through Game of Thrones. Like I'm still,
I'm
two books away.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I still have a book left that he's written.
Right. Yeah. So, and the Lynch version is, a lot of people don't like the Lynch version. I love it. I think it's really, really good. There are a lot of scenes that are in this movie that were in the Lynch version just because they're straight from the book, you know? And obviously they have their own take of how things work. The personal shields are so hokey in the 1984 version. However, you do get pre-Picard Patrick Stewart as Gurney Halleck in the 1984 in that version. It's funny too because I read also that that Lynch wanted a different Patrick Stewart for the role, but their gut lines crossed, and then Sir Patrick Stewart shows up and is like, okay, well, you're here. Let's just do this. And holy shit. So just funny. Anyway, but yeah.
So now I'm kind of wanting to watch it because of that. And
right.
So like I talked to my mom because she's where pretty much all of my sci-fi comes from growing up. Yeah. And I was like, I missed the boat on Dune. And she had read the books and she watched the movie and like she didn't like the movie. So I think that's where the split happened. And
yeah,
like, you know, we didn't get into our reading enough for her to read the books to me or have me read them.
Yeah.
And the movie she didn't like. So it was like, movie's out of here.
Well, it was one of those movies where, well, it's one of those stories too, where the technology was not quite there.
And that was my next point of like, how did they ever make this movie in the '80s?
Yeah, it's
well. Think Flash Gordon.
Absolutely.
Flash Gordon is one where that's the reason I never put my hand in anything.
Right. Yeah.
Another good reason. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And Lynch was a young director too in 1984, and he basically succumbed to all studio pressure. He said that he should have never directed it, which. So it's another funny thing too, because so Denis Villeneuve directed Blade Runner 2049, right? Before he did this. But do you know who was actually scheduled to direct the 1984 Dune? Ridley Scott. Ooh. But Ridley Scott decided to go to Blade Runner instead, which is crazy. So yeah, I know, crazy. The lines have been crossed in a crazy sort of way. So, Nate, what did you like? What were some big takeaways from this that you really liked?
Sure. I love the mix of practical and special CGI effects. I think they did a great job blending those together to the point where they were almost seamless. I really liked the way they did Baron Harkonnen, even though not as like crazy disfigured as he is in the first movie. Right. We haven't seen him. Well, I guess we did see him after the poison, but
He was in his little black pool of
That was. With his olive oil and balsamic.
Yeah,
right. I just need some crusty bread. Anybody crusty bread?
He's an Italian salad dressing. Oh, yeah.
Bread, exactly. Fresh Parmesan. Right. I loved the way that all of the tech was useful and not over the top. I did like the whole, I mean, house versus house, Game of Thrones, Mech Warrior, whatever analogy you want to put in there. They did a great job with that. Lady Jessica killed it. So did Duke, Leto Atreides, whatever.
Oscar Isaac.
Isaac, thank you. Killed it. We didn't get to see enough of Zendaya to really see how she's going to do, but she's been pretty good in everything.
Yeah, her story fleshes out more in the second half of this.
Right.
Obviously.
Was cool. I randomly saw a YouTube video the other day about where are all the computers in the future of Dune? And so Dune is 20,000 years in the future. There's 10,000 years from now. Well, before that, humans created a perfect AI and the AI took over basically everything, the universe, whatever, known universe. And so they had what's called the Butlerian Jihad that takes place 10,000 years from now, where the humans overthrew the ultimate AI or whatever, and basically banned anyone from owning a thinking machine upon penalty of death. So even a calculator, toast. Yeah, that's why you have those guys.
The Mentats are human computers.
Right, and when they roll their eyes back and they're white, that's they're him doing the calculation. Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So the fact that they banned that gave rise to the Bene Gesserit, the Mentats, and then what's the other one? The Space Traveling Guild or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see little bits and pieces of their history kind of sprinkled through. I love the idea that the grandfather used to do bullfighting for thrills.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. The imagery, the iconography and the imagery is really well done. The cinematography is amazing. There's some scenes that I think are too dark, but I understand why they are, because they want you to kind of lean into it and not really see everything. But what else? The military was kind of fleshed out pretty well. I liked how it was, you know, big military versus big military. But Atreides is supposed to be bigger, but then the Emperor decides to side with the Harkonnens and gives them all of his shock troopers, and those guys are gnarly. Like,
the Shadowcutter. And we get to see they're basically the Unsullied of the Dune universe, and I loved that we got to go to their planet and that the throat music and the
and the scene, all the guys upside down were getting bloodletted. Like, good God.
Yeah.
Insane. What else? The weapons were cool. I thought they could have done a little more with those. I love the animation on the shields. I thought that was really cool. Sandworms were fucking boss. They looked good and they were scary as fuck. And I think the one wanted to talk to him.
Right.
And, like, they're running for the rocks and it's standing there just like doing the throat music at him. Like, is right.
Somebody? Yeah.
There was definitely a connection there.
Yeah. Really good beatboxers, I think. I mean, that's kind of it in a nutshell. I loved it. I just want to see more.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. I think I agree with what you said initially, is that Warner Brothers did drop the ball. I think they're definitely sort of franchise scared right now and just want to see how things perform before they go. I ingest a lot of internet sort of news and everything. I did hear that the announcement for the sequel is supposed to come this week.
Right.
That they've all but signed off of it on it. And right now they're going to green light it. And then that's when it goes into pre-production and they worry about schedules and all that good stuff. So hopefully I really want to see part two. I would love, like, if we got two more movies to cover sort of the events of Messiah and Children of Dune, that would just be incredible. And watching interviews with Denis Villeneuve, he is in that sort of that Peter Jackson vein where he read the books and he loves the books, and this was his sort of passion project.
He wants to make this happen.
Yeah, and just like Zack Snyder did with Justice League, like this, he really wanted to make something that, you know, not necessarily spoke to the masses, but also was a Dune that he could get behind and he could enjoy and he could love. And that's the thing that I'm really excited about. Like, if we could get him on board for two, maybe three more movies, like, I just think that would be incredible, ideal, just amazing. I would love that to happen.
Yeah. Which is somebody who is new to this whole universe. This just seeing this movie for the first time, like, both my husband and I were like, this is great. We're like, fuck yeah, let's get another one.
Right. Yeah, it's some of the best world building that I've really ever seen. I mean, up there with Alien and Terminator and Matrix.
Oh, yeah.
And as far as world building in a first movie.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
I kind of wish I didn't know anything about Dune, honestly. I wish I'd gone into it like you, Joe, because I think we probably, Andy, you and I both probably would have been a little more. I mean, I'm super enthused about it, don't get me wrong, but I think that the not having any expectation, not having anything to compare it to.
Yeah.
God.
I know. I absolutely agree.
I'm guessing you guys are kind of like critiquing it based on whatever you know and Like, my whole thing was, like, I'm a sci-fi nerd, so obviously I'm all in and I love this.
Yeah. There, I mean,
people that just go and see it because of, like, oh, it's Dune. Everybody's talking about Dune. Let's go watch Dune.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that's where it's going to hurt, because unless you're a sci-fi nerd and you're okay, or like a fantasy nerd and you're okay with not knowing everything and having to do the kind of Game of Thrones world building of, like, okay, this goes here, this goes here, all that kind of stuff, you might be turned off on it. Because it kind of feels like it's... It assumes you kind of know a little bit of a backstory. That's how it felt to me.
Right.
Which I was able to catch up pretty quickly, but...
Yeah. So, So as someone who hasn't seen it, I know you liked the movie, but... And I know you wanted more at the ending, but... how did you feel at the end of the movie? Like, do you feel like it was less of an incomplete story, or did seeing part one just automatically say, okay, you know, this is where they are now, this is just where it's going, it's Frodo and Sam walking walking past, and that's what it is?
I'm sorry, wait, what are you asking?
No, I'm just saying, did the ending let you down, or was it, like, hopeful, like, I can't wait to see what's next?
It made me, like, give me more Dune.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What about you, Nate? How did you feel about how it ended?
It was definitely, like, the first taste free. I mean,
yeah,
it's not really, but I'm going to give you a taste, and you're going to be hooked, and you're going to want some more. Yeah, I could see how somebody who's not all in on the sci-fi of it could feel a little cheated, maybe. Like, all that setup and no payoff. Like, I have blue balls over here.
Right.
But, you know, I was all about it. I mean, let's go full tantric on this thing. I'm ready. I'm ready to wait. Yeah. We can bust in the next one.
Yeah. All right. So I think it's consensus. We all really, really love this movie and can't wait for more. Hopefully... They give the keys to Denis Villeneuve and just say, man, make your trilogy, and go to town.
With Star Wars, just let the dude make his trilogy.
Right. Yeah. They obviously didn't learn from the Snyder Cut, because everyone's like, where's the rest of it? Come on. Let's do this.
Yeah. No, Nate, and you jumped away when you said this, so I don't know if you heard this, but this was his passion project, you know, yeah,
I did
like he wrote. Yeah. Okay, yeah, he read Dune when he was younger, and he wanted to make the movie he wanted to make a movie he would be proud of as a fan going to see it, you know?
Yeah,
and I think
he crushed it, yeah.
No, 100%, and again, like, this is Zack Snyder getting his cut, this is, you know, Favreau and Filoni making The Mandalorian and bringing us back to Star Wars, this is Peter Jackson making Lord of the Rings, you know, these are properties that they want to do right by, and I think... You know, having Denis Villeneuve take this and make it was just, I mean, just a home run for Warner Brothers. Just fund him. Make it, give him what he wants.
Make it so.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Seriously, lock him in a room for a few years. Make him write and, like, go. Just go. You know?
I mean, because after this, I'm like, I'm on board. I want to read the books. Like, full in on this universe.
Yeah,
I did buy a new copy with the intent of reading it before the movie, but I didn't. I chose not to get to it. It's not that I didn't have the time. I chose to do other things. But
yeah, Mike is a big Dune fan. My brother-in-law, and we got him really nice hard copy Dune books for one of his birthdays. So
yeah, we should have had him as a guest if he'd seen it.
He's dealing with some family stuff right now. So we,
shit.
Yeah. So yeah, no, he would have been the perfect guy to have on here. So
yeah, we'll give him my best next time you talk to him.
Of course. Sure. All right. So, let's move into review number two, the Netflix series, the Mike Flanagan series, Midnight Mass. Joe and I have discussed this just a little bit on the podcast before when we talked in our segments, but now we finally got Nate to watch it.
I almost consumed the entire thing in one evening. I was up until 2 a.m. Until I just couldn't watch anymore.
Yeah,
I should have started it earlier in the day, like Joe was suggesting. But I got I got through the first five episodes and was like, what time? Holy shit. It's 2 in the morning.
So
I
Nate was
the same thing.
Yeah, Nate was live chatting us in our Rum and Regret chat, and we so we could sort of follow along where he was.
Stopped
and
doing that too. I should have kept going with that.
Yeah, but this Joe and I have said this before. Like this was Flanagan's best, I think, so far that he's given Netflix. Just a really great take on the vampire series where. Like, you know, they usually happen in these really populous areas and like, you know, like they're either hiding in, you know, in plain sight and there's sort of a bigger, you know, sort of against each other. But now you have this, it happens to first a priest, right? And then on this nowhere island community, right? Where everybody knows everybody, everybody's in everybody's business. And I just thought that is such a brilliant setting for this story. And it was funny. So in the second episode, where I think the end of that episode is the storm, where you see the creepy sort of figure on the beach, right? Running along and Riley goes after, you know, runs out there after him because he gets the sort of, oh yeah, the, you know,
Monsignor. He looks like the Monsignor. Yeah.
Monsignor used to do this. Right. And so
creepy thin man.
Right. So anyway, Jamie says, she's like, oh, I wonder if the priest is killing all those things. And I immediately say, oh, is this Silver Bullet? And she's like, what's that? I'm like, you haven't seen Silver Bullet? And so now I'm filing divorce papers, obviously. But
wow, I haven't seen Silver Bullet either, so.
No!
Sorry.
Ken almost divorced me over not seeing Silver Bullet.
I'm assuming it's a werewolf movie?
It is a werewolf movie. Everett McGill and Gary Busey in one of Busey's.
Oh, God, just Gary Busey.
But Corey Haim actually plays the lead as a little boy who's in a wheelchair, but I think what's a late 80s movie. It's
85. I have seen this. Yeah. I have seen this. Okay. Never mind.
It was one of those movies that I watched a lot growing up, and it was, but it had a certain similar theme, obviously, to Midnight Mass. Anyway, I've talked already so much. let's get your opinion of this. And what did you think of this?
Oh, me? Oh man, it is fucking brilliant. I mean, like I said in the chat, I pretty much called the beats before they happened, but it didn't matter.
Right.
Because they delivered them so well. And the jump scares that were sprinkled throughout and just the creepiness and the like, wow, there's some reflective eyes over there. Holy shit. They're 9 feet off the ground now. Like, there, you know, there's the moment that every good horror thing should have where it's like, what are you doing? Why would you go back in there? What the fuck? Like,
bitch, okay, I'm glad
he died.
Bitch, get out the room, right?
Yeah. Okay. So dark island fishing town with a bunch of dead houses. You walk by and there's no wind and a door creaks open.
Right.
I'm running. I'm not going to invest. And that's before the creepy echo response, call and response bullshit. Like, are you kidding me right now?
Get the fuck out.
Yeah.
No, he deserved to be Lunchables at that point. That's fine.
Well, his name was Bull.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, yeah. I loved the way they did this. This show is going to win all the awards. Like, not forget the fact that the main priest actor, I'm not sure what his name was, actually killed it. Yeah, yeah. He reminded me of the guy who played Dracula in the Netflix Dracula movie.
Oh, that's right.
Or show. Yeah. You remember that show? It was super bloody.
Yeah.
Reminded me of that actor quite a bit, so I'd be shocked if there isn't some connection there. But the Goody Proctor character, whatever her name was.
Yeah, Bev Keeson.
Yeah. Holy shit. That lady. I wanted... So, if you haven't figured it out by now, the people that listen to the show, I'm a, like, pretty militant atheist when it comes to religion. So, this whole... So, forget the vamp... I love vampires, but forget the whole horror aspect. Forget everything else. The religious, like... zealotry and just idolatry in this show made my skin absolutely crawl. Like,
absolutely. How are you going to take to that?
Oh my god, it was like, I remember, no, you're flashing me back to shit. Yeah, I was having some pretty heavy PTSD from that, but...
likewise.
Fuck, yeah. God, it was so good. I mean, the actor that played Riley was amazing. The actress that was his... kind of squeeze back in the day was great.
Yeah, so Kate Siegel, I had no idea. Kate Siegel and Mike Flanagan are together.
Parent. Oh, really?
Yeah, they're together. So that's why she's in all of his stuff. But again, like, you wouldn't know it. Like, she's so good. Dude, her scream when they're on the boat and mm-hmm. the sun comes up, like, mm-hmm. you know, like, There have been those moments in other shows, and you like these people sort of react with that, like that weird yeah. sort of like,
no,
just it's legit. Like
horror. As if they actually immolated the actor in front of her.
Yeah. Like, absolutely, like she wasn't ready for. Like, it seemed like she wasn't ready for it, and you're just like, right. And you feel it. I mean, oh my god, like
yeah.
Like that moment for me was like the real, like, oh my God, like that was just like, it was such a good, I was like, yeah, imagine your best friend just bursts into flames right in front of you. How the hell are you going to react?
Right.
Yeah. Like that's just, oh man, it was so incredible.
I've seen this reference as like a monologue mass. Because right. Well, there is a fair amount of just...
There's a lot of talking. Exposition, for sure.
Yeah. Right. But
it's That's worth good. It. And at Dude. That point, I think at that point, that makes all of it worth it. And then from there, it's like the roller coaster just goes downhill, and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Dude, when Riley has just been turned, and he's in, like... the workshop for vampires right before it turns dark. That whole episode alone was like, I mean, like you have successfully connected vampirism with modern religion, and you've sort of, you know, you've accepted it, and you're making these weird sort of parallels, and like it was just. So I just thought that was such a brilliant take on this. Like he justified everything he was doing through passages in the Bible. And it was just like, oh my God. Like, it's just, it was so fantastic. I just thought that was such a great episode to watch, because it's like, and then like you have full on familiar, like Bev Keen and the other dude, I forget what his name was. Like they just, they're totally cool with it. Like, they already had to mop up on aisle 9, you know?
Sturge. Like, right. Sturge.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, they were just like, they were all in. I mean, obviously, you know, Bev was going to be in because she thinks, you know, Monsignor walks on water. But,
the best, though, is when, like, at the end of it, where she's like, oh, I'm totally fucked, and starts digging in the sand.
Yeah.
I love that part.
That was my first. So when all the buildings were gone, that was my first thought. Like, why aren't you mofos digging? Like, right. You could easily dig something, or somebody's got to have an easy up laying around, or there's a tent in the forest somewhere. Yeah, yeah. Something.
You all live in an island in the middle of nowhere where there's like storms and shit. Like,
yeah.
You should know how to build an adequate shelter.
What would have been cool is if they went to. Oh, sorry. What would have been cool is when they went to go turn over that canoe at the end, that there was somebody underneath there, like, no! I was waiting for that to happen, like there was a hiding place.
Yeah. One of my absolute favorite scenes was the night where everybody's going to Midnight Mass and they're going to do that big sort of reveal with everything when the demon comes in the robes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like,
man. Like, imagine just walking into church and seeing that. Yeah.
Like, well, especially at the point where the sheriff is trying to pull him and his son out. Like, oh, fuck, we are out of here.
Like, oh.
That actor, too. Holy shit. The guy that played the sheriff, fuck. He was good.
Yeah,
and that whole, his whole speech about what happened after 9/11 and everything. Oh, my God. Like, when I was in San Diego when that happened, and two of my roommates were from Pakistan, or their families were from Pakistan, and that shit happened to them. Like, they got hazed brutally just because. And yeah, dude, that guy killed it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But
his son too. His son did a really good job.
Yeah, I did enjoy that part of it as anti-religious as we are, you know, as most of us are on this podcast. Again, the young people sort of trying to figure out what their beliefs are in this. I thought that was really good. That was a really good, you know. They did sort of focus on it quite a bit, obviously, because it was a big part of who they end up being in the end and everything. But yeah, and I really love the slow burn of, because, and initially too, you see everybody in old people makeup in the beginning.
Right. I noticed that. Like, what's going on with that? Oh,
right. You're just like, okay, so we're probably going to see either flashbacks of them as young people or, you know, something's going to happen. And I love the, especially with the doctor's mom, her
transformation.
Slowly like better and better. And like, she ended up upstairs in a room, you know, again. And that slow transition. And then the reveal, obviously, the big reveal of the girl getting up out of her wheelchair in church, I thought was pretty amazing. But yeah, the slower reveal of all the older people slowly getting better, I thought was great. And yeah, and then finally the one scene, and Nate, you put this in your, it's like, he's spiking the blood.
Yeah, that was early too when I called that.
Yeah. So again, really well written. Great cast. And just, I mean, man, just a great story.
I gotta say, like, I'm bummed, though, about Joe Colley and his dog.
They 100%.
This series.
100%. Like, as soon as I saw the hot dog drop and you could see the floral print next to it, I was like, oh, that bitch fucking killed his dog.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, I was literally hand over my mouth. Like, oh, no, don't kill the dog, dude.
Right.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I know we talked Dune in this also, but this picture has got to be in the treatment.
Absolutely.
This is the angel spreading his wings at the front of the church. Oh, God.
That was such a great, that's such a great scene alone, having that in there. Oh, man.
I want to know how he got all that garb on the angel.
I know. Yeah, the conversation that, like, what's the conversation that you have? I'm going to put this robe on you.
And then you're going to walk down this aisle and you're going to do this and that. And he's just like,
That thing is way smarter than I think we give it credit for. Like, it shushed the guy when he was going to fill up the sacrament or whatever. That scene, holy shit. When Riley comes back to the rec center and then the priest is on his knees and he looks like, oh.
Yeah.
And then Riley freaks out and then the thing covers like 50 feet in a blink. And you're like, oh, God damn it. I didn't want him to get, and his girl too.
This
is not a happy ending situation. He was getting his wings clipped by Aaron.
Oh, that was amazing. And she's like bringing him back to feed on her more, like, as she's doing it. Oh, it was so good. They didn't show what happened to that thing, right? Like, it was struggling across the water, but that was
it. Well, I think it's just, he died.
It's assumed.
Well, yeah, or they may continue the story, who knows, with the different, you know, if it got to a point where it could cover itself, who knows?
Well, maybe. I feel like it's assumed because at the end, the very end, she said, I can't feel my legs. So that means that the blood is gone, and that's the typical vampire trope is that when the alpha dies, then you're good. But I would have liked to see him burn up like a moth or something.
That's what I was kind of waiting for too. It was like when he flies across the whole island. I'm waiting to see him dive bomb and just.
Yeah, right. The kids say it's 30 miles. There's no way he's going to make it, So I don't know. I do feel that maybe they did film it and they just didn't have time for it or whatnot.
My question, though, is where is this place actually?
Right.
Where is this island?
Right.
Yeah. I want to say it's like off the coast of Nova Scotia or something.
Right.
Is it off the coast of New York?
Maine or something. Yeah.
I did love the priest's sort of redemption, not necessarily redemption at the end, but his realization of totally screwing this up and then ripping the collar off and then bursting into flames on the little bridge with his
family.
I thought that was a fitting sort of end for him. But
yeah, I kind of don't. So I don't really buy. I don't buy the priest's turn at the end. Like he is such this fervent disciple of this angel thing, and then his second in command lets everybody out and everybody gets butchered or whatever. And the church is covered in blood. That's what snaps him out of his holy crusade to bring the angel to the masses.
His gal basically told him or looked at him like, you're not. No. All of this to keep his lover alive. So when she was just like, this is not the person that I love, and I'm not okay with this. He was like, oh fuck, I fucked up.
Fair point.
I agree. Like I think that you have, he had a certain idea on how everything was going to go, and then the second you get Bev sort of in charge of stuff, and everything just starts to go to hell. And then, you have the midnight feast, as it was in the church, I think that once you look at it, you're just like, this is not how I wanted this to go. And this isn't, this was messed up from the beginning, but I had sort of a handle on it. Now I have no handle on it. And
the whole reason I did this was for my wife, for not my wife, but my gal. Right. And then the daughter dies and he's like, oh, this is just fuck.
So, but man, yeah, I can't wait to see what Flanagan does next. So this is just such a cool show and just such a great spin on the vampire mythos. I loved it. I thought it was great. So
you said there's going to be like possibly a season two?
I have no idea. That's just what I gathered from us not knowing the vampire's fate,
he's going to do something radically different. It's super awesome.
I think so. And I think that that's working. Honestly, I wouldn't, how this ended, I wouldn't want to, I probably wouldn't want a season two unless it measured up. And I don't know how you could capture this magic again.
Yeah.
It was billed as a limited series too. So I think everyone's kind of expecting it to be done.
Right.
At this point.
Yeah.
I don't see how they could continue it.
No.
Making these, dude, they're so good.
Everybody's dead. Everybody's dead except for the two kids.
He's been giving us sort of this anthology series anyway, so just keep writing. Keep writing, Flanagan. We'll take whatever you give us.
Keep making your stories.
Right. Yeah. So all right. Any final thoughts, guys?
No, I'm in Vampire City now though. I'm thinking about other vampire shit I want to watch.
Right. Yeah. Oh God, what was the? Oh, so we, Jamie and I just watched Night Teeth on Netflix.
Oh, I saw that. That looks fun.
It was. It was fun. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, it's not changing the mythos or doing anything.
Right.
It is a fun watch. Like if you need, you know, a couple hours of mindless entertainment and fun stuff. Alfie Allen, Theon Greyjoy, is in it, and he plays sort of the main antagonist. He's very good as sort of the cheeky vamp. Megan Fox has a little cameo in it as well. And we know what her hair color is.
Mind. She's batshit crazy. If she's dating Machine Gun Kelly, I don't want to get anywhere near that.
That's true. Yeah. But no, that was definitely a fun watch. And the two, one of the main actresses in there plays sort of the unhinged vampire pretty well. So nice. If you need something to watch and you got a couple hours to kill, definitely give Night Teeth a try. So
yeah, I saw that. I was flipping around today, and it's on my list. So
cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe, final thoughts?
Watch Dune, watch Midnight Mass.
Nice. Nate, final thoughts?
Yeah, don't drink the Kool-Aid, especially from a priest. And if they say they've seen an angel, be very skeptical.
All right, yeah, especially from the youthful representation of your old priest.
Nobody put two together in the town. Right, come on.
Yeah. That picture's been up in the church for how long?
Well, you know, but the resolution wasn't all that great. So, you know.
It was pixelated.
Yeah, it was a little bit. So, you know, who knows? Anyway. Oh, man. All right. What did you guys think of Dune? What did you guys think of Midnight Mass? Let us know on the socials. You can find us on Facebook at the Rum and Regret Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at @rum_regret. We're also now on Instagram at the Rum and Regret Podcast, or I think it's just Rum and Regret on Instagram. Joe, where can they find you?
Joe Chickadee on the socials or joechickadee.com.
Nate, where can they find you?
Avid Gamer on all the socials, AV1DGamer on the socials and all your favorite gaming platforms of choice.
Nice. I am Crazy Drake on Facebook, Andrew Drake on Twitter. And until the next time, we have spoken. Atreides! Atreides!
The Kool-Aid!
Atreides! We are Shai Halud.